Welcome to the Lax Worm and Coach Bear Show, your lacrosse odyssey for news, stories, and special guests. So sit back, buckle up, and enjoy the ride.
Sit back, buckle up, and enjoy the ride. I say that a lot, Bear. Do you say that a lot?
Absolutely. I mean, why wouldn't you? That's just part of life.
Has a ring to it, right?
Sometimes you just don't. Yeah, just sometimes don't buckle up. You know, take a risk.
Hey, so Casey, you online here? I see this number, and I'm like, this has got to be Casey Powell. Who else would join us this early morning?
How you doing, guys?
We're doing well. So do you say that too? Do you say buckle, whatever that saying was? I mean, that's
buckle up.
Buckle up, yeah. And let's take a ride or something. Yeah, it's one of those popular ones. Nothing but the best here, Casey. Nothing but the best. Hey, so I got to ask you a question because I got such a kick out of one of the tweets. You were it just came out, I think. I just was reading it, and it was something about you and Bella, your daughter, playing catch, and she asked you why you don't use your left hand, and he said because you don't have to anymore.
Yeah. It was funny. It kind of caught me off guard. She's finally caught the bug for lacrosse and, you know, asking all sorts of questions and how to fake, and I'm, of course, eating it up, you know, on the inside, knowing my daughter's now interested in the game, pursuing it. But, I was just, you know, I play catch all the time, and I don't play with my left anymore. It always felt awkward, and it still feels awkward, so I just gave it up. But I didn't tell anybody, and she picked up on it, and I just thought it was really funny.
That's great. Called you right out on that.
Called me right out on it. I did switch to the left for a couple and then went back to my comfort zone.
That's funny.
Well, I wish I would have had her around when we were doing some Florida launch scouting reports and Chiefs.
Yep. She only knew the top players on the other teams and she didn't like them.
So she's getting into lacrosse now. She wasn't really into lacrosse before then,
Not really. I mean, she's played a little bit of rec ball when she was younger, then kind of gave it up, and over the past couple of years played rec for the Boca Jets. And then this year she finally caught the bug, and now she's got the stick in her hand all the time. So really, really fun to see.
Interesting. So, you know, Casey, I reached out to you, and this is, you know, I don't want to say old news because it's never old news, right? You always want to remember people that were on this earth and inspired us and helped us. And Rob Kevovit, was your teammate at Syracuse and also your roommate. And he passed away, and he was only 45 years old. I mean, that blows me away. You know, tell us a little about him. I mean, I'm sure you've done this many times, but I haven't heard it. Tell me a little about him and your relationship.
Yeah, I mean, I haven't really talked about it, you know, too much other than my Syracuse circle and, of course, my family and stuff like that. But, you know, what comes to mind is just he was a really smooth cat. He was just an amazing person. He was very calm. He was very chill. Never too high or too low. And just, you know, obviously one of the greatest Syracuse lacrosse players of all time and my brother Mike's favorite player. And you know, just comes from a wonderful family, and it's just it's tragic and it's terrible. And you know, he left two boys behind that both play lacrosse. And you know, it's hard to believe. To be honest with you. So it's been tough, but I guess, you know, it's been nice to talk about him and, you know, and remember him, the impact that he made on so many people.
You know, it's interesting because Bear and I started doing this show on Friday really to kind of start talking about folks again, you know, people that have maybe stepped out of the limelight a little. You know, that are not playing, that are still considered legends of the game. And you know, he was on our list and we never got him. And it was interesting because, you know, you young guy like that and you hear about this and you're just like, wow, you know, it's something that, you know, you had in your head, you were going to learn a little bit more about him, never got to do it. And, you know, now everyone starts talking about him and you just realize how much you missed, you know, and how much he should have been moved up to the top of the list, so to speak. You know, it's just an interesting. Do we know, and if it's not public and it doesn't, no one wants it to be public, I get it, but we know how he passed, because I never really caught that.
We do, and I'm at liberty to talk about it. Unfortunately, he took his own life. He was battling with depression and had a tough year with his business, and his family is starting a foundation called 15 for Life, which will encourage people to talk about depression and to get help and not be embarrassed by it, but to to be open about it and let people know how you're doing and understand that everybody's going through something, as you always hear. It's kind of cliche, but it's true. And it's made me reconsider how I want to live my life, and how it gives me an opportunity to be open to some of the things that I've held in. So we're gonna definitely honor him and honor his family and the mission of his family, and that's something that's going to be very important for what I do moving forward, is playing in his honor and for him and for his legacy.
Casey, it's such a tragedy, and I think it's one of those things where I know you just talked about how the way you want to live your life, and you coach, we've been fortunate enough to coach some young 20-25s against each other in the summer circuit, and it's like you're around all these kids, and I've been around some urban kids, and it's like the old coaching of like just grinding a kid when they first come out to the field and then they leave, or maybe they're late or all that. Do you think because of all this awareness now, like if a kid's having a bad practice or if he's late or something happens, like should coaches now, or are we switching gears to like, instead of just putting them on a line and running, is maybe have a conversation with the kid a little bit and find out what's going on? I feel like some of these things are definitely opening up the eyes to a different relationship with our players.
Yeah, I think, I think you're spot on. I think it's, I think it's good to take a moment and how it is, Bear. They come up to practice, they circle around you and you're fired up to get them going. They're fired up to play lacrosse, but you can kind of read what they're doing and who they are, and, you can see it on their face sometimes. So I think coaches and, people around the game, the ambassadors, need to kind of check in with our next generation and lend a hand.
Yeah, it's a tough thing now, there's so many things going on in these kids' lives, and certainly this past year didn't help any, right? And just in general with everything that was going on, certainly a lot of people, and mental health issues have become really, a prominent focal point, I think, for society right now. And 15 for Life sounds like it's going to bring more attention to that, which is something that I think is needed. And I think all of us, to some degree have been there, right? We've all kind of felt that, at different degrees, obviously, of depression or anxiety or something that affects you mentally that no one else sees. You feel it and you're going through it and you try and put that smile on your face and keep going. But it's such an important topic nowadays.
It is. And like you just said, we all go through it in some respect. If you don't, you're full of that.
Right.
So it's good to talk about it. And that's, what the Cava family has requested. And they've been reaching out and to all his friends, and they've been super incredible. They're an incredible family. And for the sake of Rob and the way he lived, we're going to live for him. We learned at the funeral why he wore number 15, and it was his brother Andy gave a nice speech, and it was, he said it wasn't because of his favorite player, or it wasn't handed down from another player. It was because there's one girl and five boys in the family, so he wore it for family, which is really cool.
Wow.
We didn't know that before.
That's interesting.
Oh, that's great.
It just gave me chills when you said that.
Yeah.
Casey, you, your career, obviously, I think you know, for us older folks, we know your career, we've seen your career, but some of our listeners aren't, you know, that old, and we know that we don't have everything. They're not that old, Mike. Not as old as Mike and I, but your career. I mean, you know, you had some people might think, you know, you're the first to wear 22. It's like nope. You know, we can even dig back. I sometimes even ask, is, you know, Gary Gate is or Paul Gate? And they're just like, they stymie for a second. I'm like, come on, you know, like you can't be stymieing over this. But we, you know, I know Mike and I like to talk about the recruiting process and making the decision, you know, to go to Syracuse. And then you throw on the jersey, you know, 22. And how does that process, talk to us about your recruiting process and then the 22, is it just that story is one of the few just great long history stories of college lacrosse.
Yeah, thanks. It was a dream come true for sure. I mean, I was inspired in 87 when I went to my first game in the Dome, and Gary Gate did called the Air Gate for you young bucks out there who should know what that move is.
Google it.
But essentially inspired not only by that play, but by the line drills and the aura of the Dome and Coach Simmons' white hair, you know, flailing out of his hat and the cutoff shirts. And it just had so much swagger. And it really, you know, I picked up a stick before that and I had heard about Syracuse lacrosse and I'd been following a little bit. But once I went there and saw it, I knew that's what I wanted to do. And I would always go in the backyard. I'd be Gary Gate. My brother Ryan would be Paul Gate, and my brother Mike, we'd always make him be the opposing team's goalie. So we'd scout, you know, Scott Bacha Galupo, and my brother Mike would come out with sweatpants on the way he wore them, and you know, my brother Ryan would be having a bag of flour and doing a crease, and we'd mow the little grass that we had left just to make it and tighten the net and make it look championship ready. And you know, we'd announce the game kind of in our heads, but it became a fantasy, and it's we fantasized about being those guys and wearing those numbers. And you know, we ended up our path led us there, and we were able to you know, have dreams, and our dreams came true, and it was just amazing. You know, I think we built our fantasy, our passion, and our development, and our love for the game right in our backyard. So we didn't have to seek it out. It was once we found the sport through our elementary coach Benny Quattro, we just fell in love with it. We had the stick in our hands all the time, and we didn't know what the process would be. My parents didn't go to college, and our school didn't have a program at the time, and so everything was brand new. So I just remember we had coaches coming to our school, and we'd be called out of class down to the guidance counselor, and they'd say, hey, Carl Runk from Towson, Maryland's here to see you. And we'd I'd be like, who the heck's Carl? You know, I didn't know anything about the game at the time. And but we had coaches left and right coming to check us out. And then Jason Kaufman went on to play at Salisbury and kind of opened the door for everybody and the floodgates of recruiting, basically. And so we became heavily recruited. And every place I went on my five visits, I wanted to go to after I left. And then I thought about it more. And my dream had always been to go to Syracuse. And I had that opportunity and I took it. And yep, got to wear 22 and then watched my brother win a national championship in it. And my other brother, Mike, won two of them in it. And it was just very special. So my parents and my grandmother, they had the opportunity to go to 10 straight Final Fours and watch their boys. So it was a great run. And I just know my parents are still figuring out and wondering what they should be doing. They tailgated for so long. I think they're looking for a new team now.
Oh, boy. That's great.
No, I was going to say that's awesome. That's a great story. And I think that, you know, to watch your siblings, you know, wear the same number and have the same experiences is quite amazing. But, you know, one of the things I when I coach, it's like kids ask me, you know, about their position. They're like, oh, you know, I was like, no, you play lacrosse. Like when we have the ball, we're on offense. When we don't have the ball, you're on defense. Like, so you're playing lacrosse. And, right. And it's like, you don't play a position, you play lacrosse. And then now, you know, You were attackman of the year and midfielder of the year. From your perspective, I mean, it's pretty unselfish, right? And you like to go out there and just say, what does our team need? And I'll play whatever. How's your approach with like coaching kids now? And is that something that you pull out of your hat? Do you say, hey, look, you know, by the way, I played midfielder and attack. You can play whatever, you know, I need you to play.
Yeah, I'm with you. I try to tell the kids, hey, you're playing offense. I just, looking back, I never thought when he said my sophomore year after being, winning a national championship and having a great freshman year, I never thought that he'd say, all right, you're going to play a different position. But as soon as he did, I did not care at all. It wasn't something like, oh man, I was like, oh, okay. I'm still playing at Syracuse and coach wants me here. So I never gave it a second thought. From a playing perspective, I did have a hard time coming out of the game. I'd never done that. So that took a little bit of adjustment to stand on the sidelines because I had never really done that before. So, but I definitely use it, Bear. When kids have a problem with their position, which they often do these days, I have to coach them through it. And, hey, we could use you here and you can dodge from up top. And you kind of have to sell it to them. But it's this, as you said, it's breaks down playing offense.
Well, you graduate from Syracuse, and I think what our listeners hopefully don't understand is what a trailblazer. I mean, when we were playing box back then, let's call it field indoor lacrosse, like still probably most places had 6x6 cages and whatever. But you get you're the MVP of the NLL as an American. I can't imagine you had a ton of box experience prior to your entry to the NLL. What was that transition like for you to step in and play pro indoor lacrosse? And how long did you think it took you to figure that out? Or did your game just lend itself better to the pro game, to the pro indoor game?
All good questions, especially for development of lacrosse. I'm a big believer in box lacrosse and what it did for me as a player in the present, but also what it did for me to extend my career. So it helped me kind of reinvent myself as a player. And it was the greatest challenge I had in the sport, is trying to learn box lacrosse. But it was definitely the most rewarding. I did, after my senior year of high school, I was committed to Syracuse. I did move to Toronto for the summer, and I worked for a hedge fund and did a mail run through the city during the day. And then we'd practice and play box lacrosse for the Toronto Beaches at night. And I lived with a family, so I got a little bit of experience. We got crushed in the playoffs by Peterborough with John Grant Jr. and Tracy Kaluski and a lot of mean defenders. I just remember I hadn't been exposed to that type of gritty play. And, I got my fair share of hits, no doubt. But when I went up there and started to excel a little bit, they take your number down and they go after you. So they try to intimidate you. So that took a little while to get used to. And then a couple summers over when I was in college, I would play for the Akwesasne Thunder. And then later I joined the Six Nations, played for Six Nations. So I had a little bit. And then my college career was over, my dreams just came true, and I was, I was happy where I was, and I had some endorsement opportunities, and I didn't know, what the future was. I was enjoying playing in Vail and Hawaii and all that kind of stuff, and representing products and teaching it, camps and clinics, and then I was drafted to the NLL, and I showed up, but it wasn't a new dream of mine, and it wasn't a childhood dream to play pro lacrosse, so I really wasn't as into it as you might think somebody would be, because I had just done what I always wanted to do. So I played for the Rochester Nighthawks, and we made the championship and lost to Toronto Rock, and the same thing happened the second year. John Grant joined the team, and same thing, we lost by one to the Toronto Rock and 17,000 fans, and I just wasn't a good teammate. I wasn't going to all the practices, and I was kind of over it, so I stopped playing. And then I moved to Southern California, and I was doing all the lacrosse things, and Major League Lacrosse started this time, and Anaheim started a program. So I was like, hey, this is in my backyard, I'm living in South California, let's try it again. And I spent another 2 years, and we were 2-14 and 4-12, and just had a really, really tough go. And I did pretty good. I got to play with my brother Ryan, and I got a lot of reps, so I started to get the game a little bit, although I didn't have a lot of supporting help around me at the time. And then I give that up. I move back to New York, and I'm in New York, and the New York Titans start. And this is when I'm, you know, kind of, I think probably 28, and I'm, you know, starting to get past, you know, kind of find some new goals and some new opportunities. And I was able to really get really into it. And I lived in New York where the team was, and I trained my butt off. I was shooting constantly. I was playing as much as I possibly could, even in between practices and stuff like that. And so for the next 3 or 4 years, I really grinded it out and learned it and watched a ton of film and just really devoted a lot of my time and attention to that, not only getting in the best shape possible, but developing my shot and my understanding of the game. And it's become a lot simpler. And there's no doubt I love box lacrosse, though. But that's my box lacrosse story.
Casey, talk a little. You mentioned goals, and you said you kind of had set your goals. You did your dream, and then it was kind of tougher to kind of get yourself all, you know, motivated to go forward, I guess. But people that are listening that maybe haven't gone down that road yet, talk about setting the goals as a player, because I think that's an important part of being successful as a player, is it not? I mean, you need to have something to strive for, but when you lose that, you kind of lose your direction, do you not?
Yeah, no doubt. I've always approached the game a little bit loosey-goosey and kind of on purpose. I don't, you know, want it to be all serious. I don't want it to be, oh, I have to do a question mark dodge here or any of that. So it's, for me, it's been free flowing, creative and artistic to play and to have fun with. So I just think, you know, having a standard for yourself is important and thinking about your game and how are you going to best help your team is always a goal of mine when I show up. How can I help this team? Do they need a lot of high fives, or do they need, you know, somebody at X, or, you know, so I'm constantly evaluating what's best for the team. And then I try to help that. And the fact that I have some, you know, different position experience, I can adapt to different situations. And again, another reason why I was able to play for till I was 40 at the highest level.
You talked about playing at a high level later on in your career. Looking at your MLL career, you were on the very first tour, you know, the tour model when they first kicked off the league in 2000. And then your first MVP comes in 2014. What was that journey like, that for those 14 years, you know, to get to that point? Do you think that it was something that you just look back and say, well, I don't know how that route came to fight, you know, being older and understanding and doing it, and maybe why it didn't happen earlier? Was it players change, the league change, did you change? Because I think you know, you're always MVP capable.
Yeah, good question. I always think about that a lot too. I think I approached my body of work that year in a more serious manner, whereas a lot of times, you know, I would show up and just go and not really think about it. And I'd have good games, I'd have bad games, and it wouldn't bother me kind of either way. But I took the, you know, later on in my career, I took it a little bit more serious and cared more about my performance and tried to, again, be the best teammate that I could be. And I think I was able to win the MVP later on because my brother Ryan retired, and he was kind of stealing them all for a couple of years on me. So I was glad to see him retire from my personal accolade collection.
Oh, so let's, you know, you watch guys, you mentioned John Grant Jr. and you watch him play, and, you know, are you guys about the same age?
Yeah. Yep.
So he plays.
He's a year older. Oh, man.
So he plays to when he does. When you're watching him play, are you sitting there saying, I can get out there and play with this guy? Or are you saying, I'm glad I'm not out there right now, I need the rest?
No, I definitely feel like I could get out there and play.
Yeah. Is there any thoughts of that? I mean, you know, you talk about all these new leagues and, you know, with the PLL coming on and you know, is there thought? I mean, do you have that in your head? Do you sit there and say, boy, I'd love to give this another shot? Or are you, I mean, you're not using your left hand anymore, so you gave that away. But but is that something you still think about?
Of course.
Really?
I mean, I loved it. I consider myself a, you know, lacrosse journeyman, and I've always loved the challenge of a new season and new teammates and again a new role and yeah, I think about it, but I'm, you know, my body's been falling apart, especially this year, and now I'm just getting ready for my upcoming Delray Beach Lacrosse Festival and Lake Placid. So, but it's still just as motivating to me to when I take a jog or work out. It's certainly a lot harder working out these days, but it's just as motivating to me to be like, hey, I'm going to play in a month in Delray Beach, and you know, I get excited about it, and I haven't played in quite a while, so I'm just kind of excited. But it's the same excitement whether I'm playing you know, backyard speed lacrosse or playing in the world championship. It's kind of the same feeling.
So let me,
Casey, you just mentioned, oh, go ahead.
I was just gonna say,
Mike, we're just gonna say the same thing. No, actually, Casey, you do a lot. I mean, like, you talk about your excitement for playing. You know, yeah, speed lacrosse. You have the video game that you worked with, and then you have so many. You're coaching youth. You got your daughter playing. You just feel like these new challenges, and you're just like, hey, I'm just gonna keep reinventing myself and doing new things. Like, walk us through that process of like how you see these opportunities, you know, with Powell lacrosse, and you just tackle them.
Yeah, it's you know, I definitely spread myself thin and possibly too thin, but I've always been like that. I'm like, hey, lacrosse has, you know, given me so many opportunities, and it continues to do. And I've always wanted, you know, I thought about this when I was young. I want to look back and say, hey, I did all these things, and it was because of this sport. So, yeah, I jump on new opportunities, and you know, I've done a lot of different things. You know, from business type things to endorsements to meeting so many incredible people and, you know, design, you know, product design and stick design and, you know, even video game development. And yeah, there's been a lot of fun and a lot of opportunities. And again, just another reason why I'm thankful about the sport. And now that I'm older and my pro career is over, I want to do what I feel is best for the sport. And that's why I've been doing what I'm doing. And part of Powell Lacrosse, and we've been providing great lacrosse sticks. And, you know, I have a great plan for the future. I'm trying to help people that through my foundation that are injured and sick that need our help, and you know, letting them know that hey, we're a family. Lacrosse is a family, and then speed lacrosse is it's fun, and it helps build lacrosse players, and it continues to you know, have a stick in your hand, and it embodies all the greatness of the sport without saying, hey, I'm playing this to go get a college scholarship, or I'm playing this to go play pro. It's just to play.
Yep.
And that's what I want to do moving forward, is be involved with you know, growing the game, continually growing the game and nurturing the game a little bit, and certainly having fun and hopefully providing more players with opportunities like I had.
Well, you know, Casey and Chris Bocklet just joined us. Chris, how you doing?
I'm doing great. It's great to hear you guys speak. How are you?
We're doing well, Chris. And Casey, I just wanted to say, you know, you've become, and it's interesting because Chris came on and I figured I would put you guys on together here, because when we heard about Chris's accident, you jumped right to it. And I think, you know, being the I don't want to call you the elder statesman because it's not an insult, but someone that has really kind of been, you know, lacrosse, really helped out. Were you surprised with everyone jumping in and helping Chris out?
Not really. I mean, first of all, I was down in Delray Beach, and Chris and his family spend a lot of time down here, and that's where the accident happened, and this is where my daughter lives, and Chris is a friend of mine. So it not only hit home, but it hit real close to home, where I was already here, and you know, when it happened. And and then Adam Gittleman, you know, who I'm very tight with, and Chris is a former teammate, I've reached out and said, hey, let's use your network and, you know, pump it out through the World Lacrosse Foundation to see if we can help Chris. We know he's going to need help. So it kind of went like that very quickly, and we got it out. And I'm not surprised on, you know, the impact and just who the Bakla family is. And what they mean to lacrosse, I think it was telltale of about the support that they received is the impact of that they've made. So I think everybody jumped to help Chris as much as possible, knowing that he's such a big influence, and not only as a coach and a ambassador and a leader to a lot of young kids through his camps and his clinics and his training, but just a very special person. And it was awesome to see the community jump up. And we're certainly glad that CB's back in business doing his thing. And he's just as fun to listen to on his social media as ever. So.
Well, Casey,
if I can just
go ahead, Chris.
If I could just jump in, I've looked up to Casey for a long time as a younger player, watching the game, going up to Syracuse, New York, and see my cousins, and they put on the Cuse games, and they were all excited, and I saw number 22 in action then, and got the chance to play with him, and of course he throws me a behind the back pass. I'm like, oh my God, this is incredible. And now just to see what he does is what I want to do as well. And what he does for the sport and what he does for people and impact people and change their lives. I look up to him and see him as a mentor, and what he did for me and the lacrosse community, what they did for me. It still blows my mind. Like it took me a long time to understand what was going on when my parents were trying to explain it to me. I didn't understand it. Just the outreach, like I'll go through, and even though I don't know all the names, and I'm still, it's one of the things I have issues with, I feel the love. And I felt like I was just back on the team, you know, when I was lost, and the support came through at an amazing time, and it's what I needed. And it got me excited to be, going back to rehab and getting back better. So I honestly love Casey, and I'm so grateful for him. And that really means a lot to me.
Well, Casey, with that, I'm going to have to kick you off the show because I got to talk to Chris now.
Get him out of here.
Casey, right. Listen, it's a great chatting. It's great chatting with you as usual. I always enjoy talking to you, and every time we chat, I learn a little bit more. So it's always a lot of fun. But thanks for coming on and spending some time with us. Thanks for everything you do for lacrosse and the lacrosse community.
Yeah, thanks, guys. Love coming on. Go to CaseyPowell.com. I have some amazing lacrosse festivals that just launched in destination locations. And selfishly, I provided a lot of these playing opportunities so I can continue to play. But we'd love to have you guys in the circuit and have fun. But, hey, have a great talk. See you, boys.
Take it easy, Casey. Thanks
later,
a lot.
Casey.
And we should remember 15 for life, Rob Kevovit and his family putting that together. And we'll keep an eye out at it. With that and continue the word. So, Chris, how you feeling, first of all, man?
Man, I'm feeling great. I just got a game of pickleball in, my new sport, I got a smile on my face. I'm happy to be here and grateful for this moment. So thanks for having me on the show.
Hey, it's great. I had you a long time ago on the show, and we talked about practical jokes and everything else, and I still remember that show.
That's right.
But pickleball, that's become a huge sport. Bear, do you play pickleball? Bear's an athlete.
You know, oddly enough, I worked at summer camp up in Maine, and that was the first time I was ever introduced to pickleball. And I'm pretty sure I got worked over by a bunch of 9-year-old kids for like the whole summer. And I'm very, I was introduced in a bad way.
So Chris, pickleball, did you win?
Oh, dude, I had some battles. You know, the fun part is I played with my mom who's been here. She moved from New York to Florida to help take care of me. And then I just, being an active person, I needed to get outside and do something. And I found something that is safe for me to do. It's like, it's basically, the people that don't know pickleball, it's like ping pong on steroids or like mini tennis. And it's a ton of fun. And what I love about it is that any age group can play with each other, because it's not a massive tennis court where there's a lot of running. And so it's all about just kind of your shots and hand eye. And it's a lot of things like lacrosse that I see, stick handling and hitting the ball, placement and stuff like that. So it's been a fun little pickup. I love that I can play with my mom and just get games in. But to answer the question, I had one loss, and we lost. We didn't get a point out of 11, and then we had to come back and we played well. So it was a fun session.
Cool. So, you know, you obviously had everybody worried, Chris, and you know, I when I heard about it, I was, you know, obviously very concerned. The community was concerned. We heard, you know, Casey talk about it, and I think realized, based on what you said, how much the lacrosse community means to people and to people in the lacrosse community. You've gone through rehab. Where are you in your stage at the moment, if you don't mind me asking? How are you doing? Is there areas that you still need to focus on?
Yeah, absolutely. So I've been in Brain Rehabilitation Center, which is, I'm lucky, it's 20 minutes away from my house. People drive, they stay in hotels to get to the center. It's one of the best centers in the Southeast. And I've been in it for 8 weeks. And then last week, I've been kind of transitioning. We're going back to work, and they helped me kind of get back to, you know, doing emails. And I was like the only person who probably was excited to get back to work. I'm like, I'm going back to work. Yeah, like, let's do it. I can't wait. Like, and luckily, I love what I do. And I'm just focusing on the X10 camps, which is something I've been dying. I can't wait to get back to coaching. And I finally got cleared for that. I'll probably be the coach rocking the helmet. So I'm going to have the, just like I used to do, and show them how it's done by firsthand doing it, doing the drills. And, but I'm excited for this summer. We got our overnight camps, and I honestly, when this thing happened, it's one of the things I thought about, because I was opening up a new overnight camp in Asheville, North Carolina, and I put a lot of work into it, and I was all excited. And then I just was curious early on, is like, well, is all the camps, can I not be a part of them? Can they not happen? And I didn't want that to happen. And that was one of the reasons that I really plugged in and worked and really listened to my teachers and instructors and believed in them, so that I could, you know, graduate. And I actually graduate earlier. It could have been 8 to 12 weeks, and I got out in 8, and that's on Wednesday, which I'm really excited about. And I'm still going to have some issues with just, like, I'm not going as fast as I want to with, you know, emails or just getting back into the rhythm of things. And I just need to take breaks, you know, mm-hmm. like I know I'm going to get there. I just call them speed bumps, you know, and it's going to happen. I take a break. Like, I was getting frustrated the other day, and I just was like, instead of getting down on myself, like, know that this is a part of it. And I want to get where I'm going. I'm going to do it. And maybe I went for a little run, and I came back, and then I was able to, like, clear my mind and get back to it. So I'm going to have these little speed bumps that I'm going to have to work through, but I know I'm going to be back to where I am. And I'm honestly, I'm feeling back. I've got my energy back and excitement. And I see a lot of positive from this situation, which is kind of crazy to say, but never want to go through it again. But I do see a positive mindset from it.
That's an interesting comment, because I think, you know, when people hear that, you know, someone suffers a brain injury and they've got to get better, and not a lot of people look at it as positively as you, right? A lot of people are sitting there saying, you know, woe is me. But I think it sounded like you had certainly motivation, because, you know, the medicine game, right? I mean, I think that's something that we all talk about and we kind of throw around a lot, but it seems to really been the medicine game for you.
Yeah. I think, one, the support, you know, I was very lucky to have the support I had. The lacrosse community coming for me when, you know, I was getting flown to the best hospital, had people taking care of me. And then I had people who made sacrifices, like my mom. You know, she moved from New York to Florida to be by my side and dropping me off to, you know, a 31-year-old, getting rides to back, I call it back to school, like Billy Madison. But really, it was the Brain Rehabilitation Center. And I just kind of tried to see, you know, enjoy the time, you know, and see the positive. I could easily, there was days when I was getting down on myself and feeling sorry for myself. And I'd be like, I started to rub off on other people. I'm like, why am I doing that? I don't need to do that. There's a lot to be grateful for. Like, I have my hand-eye ability. I can walk, like, and I just kind of dove into mindfulness. And so things like meditation and breathing kind of changed my mindset, and I just saw the outlook and the vision that, okay, when I was in the hospital, I'm like, I'm going to get out of this hospital. But once I kind of came back for a while there, I felt like I was on another planet, and that's when I feel like people pulled me back, and that was the prayers and belief, which I, you know, the doctor said, it could be forever. Chris might not come back. And that's when I think the support beyond, you know, just me, it was everyone who came in and pulled me back to reality, you know, and then I kind of knew my name, and then it was like, okay, I didn't know any fruits. I didn't know anything. I was asking questions and they're like, Chris, raise your right hand. And I'd be like, yes, thank you. You know, like, and it slowly, kind of started coming back, and I felt the support and love. And then it kind of was like, all right, it's game time, Chris. Like, it's your turn to put in the work.
Yeah, it's hard work. I don't think, you know, I've got a little bit of a rehab background, so I get it. But I don't think people realize how difficult it is to relearn everything. You know, I think that's taken for granted, and you had to go back and relearn much of what you had already known, right?
Yes. It kind of like, I try to describe it to people, and it's kind of like, honestly, I was like a 1-year-old and had to relearn everything. Like my girlfriend, I don't remember this stuff. I have to learn from the stories. And she was like, she'll never forget giving me food. She gave me an orange, and I'm looking at the orange like, what is this? You know, I'm not saying that because I can't speak to her. And she's like, you like these are oranges. And she would hand it to me, and like, she's like, eat it. And I like, took a bite, and my face just like exploded. I'm like, it's so juicy. But like, obviously I can't say that, you know, I just have these emotions like, oh my God, that's good. But, and I had to learn things so simple, like, you know, fruits always pops in my head, like the teacher saying name fruits, and at first I would say yes, and then like the next week she'd say name fruits, and I'd be like, apple, and she would be like yes, and I'd be like so excited to name apple, you know. And then like I'd come back and then I'd get orange, and it was just, I just learned things over time. And then my, you know, people would get, my mom would get excited when I was brushing my teeth again, and like, you know, able to shower myself was like a big deal, like they let me, yeah, do it on my own. They're like, wow, he's like growing, you know. And it was something that, you know, I think my mom and my girlfriend did an amazing job of keeping it positive and like only seeing the bright side. So I only had that kind of outlook, like I'm gonna do this, and just understanding that it wasn't just gonna happen right away, you know, and it took time and patience. So I think I had like the knowledge of like, okay, I kind of understand that it's not going to happen overnight. They definitely, you know, supported me and helped me in so many ways.
Yeah. You know, I would catch up because your sister Casey would put something out there, just kind of a quick summary to everybody. And it was kind of the way that the information was being sent out, which was a great way, right? I mean, it really kind of gave a personal approach to where you were and who you were and what was going on. So I think this community went through this journey together with you, which was, you know, certainly I did, because, you know, you were, as I said in my tweet that I sent out, you know, always have been one of my favorite players. And today's show is one of those special shows where I had two of my favorite players on. So it's great to hear you. Great to hear the energy in you. I love the energy because you've always had that, and it's always been great. So you back to practical joking yet?
You know what? I throw a ton of jokes at school, my rehab. And they all know, like, I like to pull pranks. And I get my other, the other people who have experienced TBI, and they could be like a young college kid or a 62-year-old woman. We're all together. I'm like, okay, when the teacher walks in, let's all just start clapping, and, you know, and like just to mess with her. Or the other one yesterday was, let's see how many times we can say okay without her catching on that we're trying to say okay. So like, she'd be like, are you guys ready? Be like, okay, yes, let's go. And like, is it okay if I go to the bathroom? And like, I don't understand this. Like, can you help me if that's okay? And like, it was hysterical. I was like, we had a little mask on, and I'm like dying laughing. And she was like, you can tell, she's like, what is the deal with you guys? And she always knows that, she always blames me. She's like, I know you're doing some Chris. I can't quite figure out what's going on. So we always have fun. I have to, you know, it's just a part of me. And honestly, I'm happy to have that back, the personality and the energy. Cause I didn't have that. When I got out of the hospital, I was excited to be back, and I thought I was going to be like better, but that was not the case at all. And every like 45 minutes, I would just get exhausted. you know, like my brain was trying to work and it felt my whole body, and like I'd have to go lie down, but I'm not a nap or anything. So I'd go and meditate and then I'd come back and that like helped me. And then I'd be like, all right, I'm ready for the next task. And then, and I'd work on this little app that helped my memory and my brain. And then I'd get tired again. And then I have to go lie down. So, I'll never forget also speaking in front of JU. I was supposed to go to, my brain rehabilitation on Monday, and then I got asked the week before to go speak in front of JU. I'm like, you know, I'm going to a brain rehabilitation for speaking, and you're asking me to speak in front of 52 people, and this is John Gordon. I was like, it doesn't seem right, but I look up to him so much. I was like, okay, I'll do it. And I have no idea what I said, you know, but I was just, it gave me something, and I felt more energy, and so like being able to speak in front of people, that's why when you asked me to speak, I'm like, yes, I'm in, you know, because it's doing something I love, telling my story, and maybe even if a hair of it makes an impact on people, like it's worth it, you know, and it brings me energy too.
Chris, you obviously have gone through a lot here, and you've worked your tail off to get to where you are. How much have you pulled from your lacrosse or your team sport or your experience of just trials and tribulations and overcome adversity through sport? How much have you had to pull and dig back into those thoughts? Like, I've been in this situation, it's been different, but, you know, I it's like for our listeners, because sometimes I think sports gets downplayed, and then, you know, in the whole, you know, school scenario sometimes, and the value of sport in scenarios like this. Love to hear your take on that.
I love that question. And I truly believe that I'm where I am at now. Whenever I saw a doctor, they're like, you had your accident this here, and it was that this much damage, and you're like, you're here. This is a miracle. And honestly, I truly believe it's because of what I've learned through playing sports and being on a team, right? Like, this is a point where I was down and struggling, and guess who came up and came around me and supported me? Like, my team, right? And I saw, and I know that, like, in order to have a successful team, like, you have to believe in the team and you have to trust people, right? And so I had no idea what was really going on and how to get better, but I trusted that the people around me were there to support me, and they were. They were doing everything I could. Like, they were giving me supplements. They were telling me to do these little drills. They were like, it was over and constant every single day, but I just followed and believed in the process and worked with them and was excited to be there, right? And tried to bring a smile on my face to make them happy so that it would be like working with me, you know, and help me. So a lot of different lessons I've learned. The word neuroplasticity is my favorite word to share once I learned what that was, because basically in my brain, you know, I killed or, you know, neurons were not functioning, right? And that's what helps the brain function, is the neurons send messages to each other in your brain, and that like allows you to speak or, you know, remember things. And I wasn't having that, and what happened was my brain like sent new neurons over and like put in the work to pick me up, right? And I feel like that's what happened literally when I went down. Like, people stepped up, and they, you know, I have my parents, I have my sister, my family, like my brother, my brothers, my dad, everyone, the lacrosse community, I felt it, and it was amazing. They brought me back. And now, you know, just like Casey Powell was sharing, like, I still need to fill my cup a little bit and be a little selfish, because I'm not exactly where I want to be, but I'm very, very close. But I want to pour into other people like he does. That's my main mission in life, is to make the impact and do what other people did to me, and support them and give them some of the tools that I've learned, you know, through sports, through this incident and accident, and how you can overcome them in life, you know, and that's my biggest goal now. I've learned so much, and I'm so grateful for so much, and I have a new vision, and I'm excited to get to it.
Well, it sounds like you're already doing it, Chris. I mean, I'm sitting here listening to you, and you're already inspiring it. I mean, you're inspiring. I'm sitting here. I'm ready to run. I'm ready to go, man.
Let's go. Let's go on a run. Let's go.
So I mean, I think you've always been that way too. I think you know now certainly it you know there's more of a focus on it from you, but you're doing it. I mean, you're doing it. Just everyone that kind of went through this with you, I think, has this Chris Bocklet inspiration in them someplace. Has to. You have to. And it's just, I'm so glad to hear that you're going to do that, because I think you're a great ambassador. I think your personality, I think your energy, I think the, you know. Barrett, did he ever crush you guys? Did he play you and beat you guys up pretty good?
Whoa. We're gonna get that. I was just gonna say there's Chris Bocklet has scored six goals. One that has six goals, three assists against Robert Morris, which by the way, it was an 8-5 halftime game, and we're thinking, you know what, we're hanging in here a little bit, probably a little closer than what Virginia would like at this point. And then Chris scores four goals in the kickoff, the third period. Then he had the assist after the four goals.
Assist? Yeah. Those are rare for me. That's fun.
He went 6-3 in that game. It wasn't that rare. But I will say, Chris, your six goal output against the Ohio Machine in 2013 was the. I got a call that night saying, hey, do you want to coach the Ohio Machine? And I was the new head coach the next day. So maybe if it wasn't for you, I wouldn't have been the head coach of the Ohio Machine. So this puts,
I love it. Hey, I love it. You know, we're all helping each other out in the end.
That's right. People helping people.
Chris, I just want to let you know, I always love when people come on here that have like beat up on Bears team some way or another, because you could see it, and you can just hear it in his voice how frustrated he was. And so thank you for doing that, because it keeps him humble with me.
Yeah, no doubt. Really,
that's
really
what it was, that was the whole point of it in the end. I just wanted to keep him humble, you know.
Every time I look at the guest list, Chris, I'm always like, oh, just another guy that's caused injury in my life. I really appreciate that. Thank you.
It's all good.
So Chris, you know, you talk about trials and tribulation. I mean, you went through, I mean, you've won championships. I mean, you've got probably more rings than fingers, I'm sure, throughout all the levels of play. You know, I look back, and a lot of our listeners may not remember a time, but there was a time at Virginia where there was a lot of just things that would traditionally crush most college teams. You know, like you guys endured, you know, top players getting kicked off. You guys had, you know, an unfortunate, you know, case of, you know, a murder. You know, you've gone through so much. And then you have a guy like Dom Starcher that seems to have been able to hold everything together, and you guys still go out and win championships. Like, just that experience in itself and you going through that, like, I rarely ever talked to anybody played for. I mean, I had, you know, Steele and Mark Hawkinson on my team, but never really got a chance to sit down and talk about, you know, that locker room and, you know, Coach Van Arsdale and just what true professionals. Like, how was that experience for you as a player and just going through that, and how has that translated to, you know, even what you're going through now? You know, like just saying, hey, yeah, not everything's going to be perfect, and, you know, then, hey, I can still win the championship.
Yeah, I think that's a great question. I honestly think about it all the time. Like, how did Dom do what he did? So many characters, so many different people. How do you bring them together? And he was so great at, and Coach Van, and my Coach Walker, like all these guys were just amazing at building a team. And the one thing that I learned from my years is, the team that's going to win the championship isn't the most talented team, right? It's the team that comes together and everyone believes on the same mission, right? So, I mean, the year we won it was easily the least talented team. We had some amazing players at my 4 years at Virginia. And the year we won it, we even had to kick off our two best players by far, the most athletic guys. We had to have everyone believe in what we were doing, right? And everyone's got to be on the same page, and that's the ticket to success in the end. Also, it's, you know, it's momentum, right? Coming together at the right time and timing, and, you know, you don't have to win four games in the end, and picking the right time to do that obviously is going to help. But for this year, I look at like all these amazingly stacked teams, like a Duke, you know, all those kids are so talented. And they've got so many of them, especially guys that transferred over. It's like the team that is going to win it this year in the end, I truly believe, you know, and someone can easily agree. It's like, no, they just have so much talent. But I really feel like you need every single person, like the person all the way at the end of that sideline, like has to believe that in his teammates and have to be excited. And they can't be like, oh man, this stinks. I'm not playing. Like, I want to be somewhere else. Right? You need to have everyone come together. And I think that's what's special about coaches like Coach Starza, Coach Bernardo. They bring you together and they make you feel that brotherhood and community and believe it.
So you go on from that experience, then you go out to Denver and you get to play with your brothers out there. Is, you know, I know, like, for myself, you know, I've moved around, I've been some places. My wife and I still consider Pittsburgh home. We call Pittsburgh home, even though I'm from Columbus. Do you look at Denver and say, you know, that's home to you? Does that feel like a home base for you at times, even though you've been so many other places?
It's definitely a home base. And I'll give my brother helped me a lot make that a home base for me. I didn't know what I was doing after college. He's like, he was living and working out there. He said, come out there. I was originally on the Charlotte Hounds. He got me traded to the Denver Outlaws, and he's actually the reason why I ended up having a pro career, which could have easily been nothing. I'll never forget the game versus Ohio, and I was nervous. I'm not going to lie. I was following the team, hoping to get an opportunity to play, and one guy couldn't play. I think he was going off to a wedding or something, and I got a chance. So I'm all excited. I'm out. I'm you know, warming up on the field. I'm wearing like number 99 with an extra large jersey. Like, it was just like they found something, they threw it on me. It was like swallowed me up. And then I'm out in the field and I'm like, whoa. I realized I didn't know the rules. Like, because they have a 2-point line, there's no box. I'm like, where am I supposed to? How do we start these games? And like the defender guarding me, I forget who it was, he's like, I'm going to give you one. Like, come inside the 2-point line so you don't start your game with a penalty. Cause I didn't I'm like, this is different. I didn't really pay attention too much. And I went that first half and I just wanted to fit in and like, didn't want to make a mistake. And that's what I did. And I had zero really plays. Like, I didn't have any assists. I just didn't make a mistake. And my brother came to me and I've never seen him so serious. And he came to me at halftime. He goes, Chris, shoot the ball. Or they'll find someone that will. And he looked at it, and that's all he said. He like walked away. And I'm like, whoa, that, okay, all right, fine. And then, and I needed it. And then second half, I came out and I had 4 goals and like did what I did. And I was like, cause he scared the shit out of me. I'm like, oh, and then I ended up having, you know, a career, and it was an amazing career. Cause I got to eventually play with my 2 older brothers, Matt, and win a championship with him. And then my brother came, you know, and that was a wild story. Like, he came out of retirement and instead of going on a ski trip, tried out for the team and made the team. And then eventually basically wanted it bad enough where he kind of even took my spot, which was a pretty amazing and wild experience. I was just grateful. I was a younger kid looking up to my brothers, watching them play. They always played together. And all of a sudden, I got the ability to, you know, my brother's first goal, I gave him the assist. And that's, I mean, that meant the world to me. You know, like, I accomplished all my goals when I got to play with them. And it was really special. So I went on a little rant there. I got excited. Lacrosse and family gets me fired up.
No, that is definitely the direction we want to go with the conversation, because I was going to talk about that. So, Mike, yeah, I remember at one point we went out there and you know, the lacrosse community is obviously fairly small, and Coach Double D had the opportunity to coach him at Fairfield, and he was like, you know, pretty simple game in him, you know, like not a lot to him, but he's effective. Next thing we know, he's just like, he's a hard machine killer, you know, like he's off the roof, has a great game, you know, against us. And It was interesting to me
to see, you know, how good,
you know,
he was.
How good he was.
Hold on, I got
I think.
Right. And so then, was that like a surprise to you?
No, so we knew Mike was a player. Like he was an effective player. He just got it done, and he was really good at everything. And we had these little tournaments at home, these 7-on-7 lacrosse tournaments. And Mike, we'd go back, and I had a team that played against Matt, and Mike's team was all my New York friends. And Mike was just always so good. Like, he got MVP. We're just like, why isn't he playing? Like, he's that good. And he wanted to. I think when he saw Matt and I playing together, I think he was like, man, I wish I was doing that, you know? And so he tried out. He was going on a ski trip out to Colorado the same weekend they had tryouts. And he tried out. And he played really well. He was the best player there. And he got a chance to play, and his first game, he didn't really do anything. And then at the end of the game, I gave him a pass with like 5 seconds left, and he scored. So we had that moment, and we weren't sure if he was going to get another opportunity to play. And he did. He got a second chance, and he just decided, he's like, I'm not going to have that mindset, which is, I believe it's so much about your mindset. Like, I truly believe if you want to be a good lacrosse player, you have to have that belief and mindset. And he just was like, I'm just going to go for it. And he had a behind-the-back shot. I was like, oh, my God. And then he had the game-winning goal. And he just, from there, he was just so excited to be there. And as for me, I feel like I kind of, like, I got to play with my brothers. I kind of, like, checked out. And when you're playing with the best players in the world, like, if you are checking out, like, you're not going to perform like how you want to perform, right? So I was, like, in the hotel, we were sitting in the hotels all day, and I was looking at all my friends on, like, the Snapchat, like, at the beach on Saturdays, and I'm like, oh, man, that water looks so awesome. And I started to check out, and he was checking in, and I was proud of him, man. It was really cool to see. I feel like I started getting messages from everyone, all my friends who were, like, retired players, and they're like, I'm going to do what your brother did and come back in and play, and I'm like, you got to believe. You got to have that special belief that he had. And it was really cool to see him, you know, go out and then win an MLL championship. Like, I couldn't be prouder, and it's really special. And Matt was doing I can't believe. He's got his body. Like, if you look at him, he doesn't look like the most athletic guy. I'm not going to lie. And he'll probably give me shit for saying this. But he just turns it on. And he's been doing it year after year after year. And it's incredible. He's one of the hardest working guys and creative and smart players. And so it's been really fun to have for his career and see his retired number go up in the Denver Outlaws stadium or Mile High.
Yeah, you know, it's so funny. Did Matt go up to Mike at one point in the game and said, shoot, or else they're going to get someone?
yeah, he might have used that secret. I don't know. I mean, I'm sure. That's really funny. I love that.
Well, just another Bachlett crushing dreams, winning championships over one of my teams there. Jeez. Let me tell you. Now, I have to ask – so you got to play a couple of games in the PLL. Like, is that something where you said, I have to do this, you know, like, I have to try to get a shot to play in this new league, or you know, I mean, obviously you had this ingrained career, you know, with the Denver Outlaws. What was that experience, and how did that conversation go for you?
Yeah, when I found out there was a league, I was going to retire. I was probably going to retire, like, even before that, I just kind of like missed it, you know, and I switched on to different teams. But then I heard the PLL was coming out. I was like, I want to be a part of that. Like, the first, I have an opportunity to be a part of the first season. And so, you know, I did the training camp, and it blew my mind. Like, I knew, I was like, if lacrosse is going to make it and be the professional sport, just like others, like, this is how it's going to be done. Like, the people, the marketing, like, the 90% of the staff is, like, marketing, you know, and, like, getting the sport out there. Like, something that Paul did an incredible job of, better than everyone else, was that how he put himself out there. And YouTube, like, all the different social media, and they were going to take over the game on social media, using that platform to get it out there. And it's working, you know, and it's really cool to see. I had an amazing experience. I got to be re-coached by the down, Starja, which I was like, this is amazing, you know? So it was fun. It was a great journey. I love that I was a part of it. I hope that it keeps continuing to grow like it is, because it's really a special thing. I'm very happy that I get to say that I was on the Chrome, when I was, you know.
So I'm going to switch gears here a little, Chris, because you shot something out on Twitter,
Oh God.
Me being a New Haven pizza guy, a guy that grew up with New Haven pizza, Connecticut pizza, I find it just absurd that you think New York is the best pizza. So I just wanted to, you know, I know you shot it across the bow because you were looking for a little rumble here. So, you know, you go up into have you had New Haven pizza?
I didn't even think, I'll be honest, I didn't even think that this was even a thing. I thought everyone grew up knowing that New York had the best pizza. Like, it's science. It's in the water. New York's got that water that makes that crust, that hits that cheese, and I didn't even know that other people, my girlfriend's from Chicago, and she's like, Chicago has the best pizza. I'm like, what?
Yeah.
Chicago? No, it's New York. That's what New York's known for. It's the city of the best pizza.
Well, we agree on one thing, Chris, that Chicago doesn't have the best pizza. I'll stick with you on that one. No, it's so funny, and I threw that out there because I was, you know, if we had some time, we were going to run through it. But, you know, it's the pizza is such a funny thing. Everyone loves their, you know, the pizza they grew up on, right? It could be the one place down the street, and that's the best pizza in the world. And, you know, I grew up in my family, they used to love New Haven pizza, so, you know, I obviously think New Haven. And then you know, Barstool Sports comes out with Dave Portnoy, and he's out there, you know, rating pizzas now. And it's just become this whole thing. But, well, Chris, listen, we love
– Mike.
I'm not even asking you about Columbus pizza.
I was saying you're wrong about people growing up on the and talking about the pizza, because it's not Ohio. We don't talk about how good our pizza is. No, if they do, they need to be smacked, because we don't have good pizza.
Because you're not from New York, you got to have pride. You got to have pride in your pizza game. I think that's what it is.
You do. You know? Sounds like Bears bailing.
Yeah, I'm out on that competition, but Chris, I've only got one last practical joke for you.
I love it.
Yeah, I'm sure Mike is not going to listen to the show because, you know, whatever. But so what you and the siblings have to do is next Thanksgiving, you should all just wear your college championship rings to the table and see if he notices.
I like it. That'd be good. I'm into it. I'm like, poor guy.
I mean, he's the only Bachman that doesn't have one. So I mean,
he's the only one that doesn't have one. We got. I think that'll sting. That'll sting. But
just see if he picks up on it. Just see if he picks up on it.
but then he could point at the Outlaws one that he had when I saw the team and then he won it. So. That might hurt a little bit.
Next year he can pull that. Yeah, next year he can pull that one off at Thanksgiving.
Yeah, he won't be ready for it. You're right. I get 1 year up on him.
Well, Chris, listen. It was great. It was great having you on the show, and I'm glad to see that you are back to Chris Bocklet. I love it, and keep moving forward and keep doing your thing. And you know, our paths will certainly cross again as it does in this small world of lacrosse. But thanks for coming on, man.
Yeah, Chris.
You guys are awesome. I love listening to your guys' show, and thank you for having me. It was a blast. Always a good time, and good. Love the last we always share. So appreciate you.
All right, Chris. Take it easy, man.
Take care. Bye.
Bye. Oh, Bear. What a show. I sat here, and you know, it's like it went a little off kilter on the times, but two great guests.
Of course. Yeah, you nailed it. Guys that, you know, obviously legends in the game and have done some great things, continue to do great things. I think that's probably, yeah, I always say this, it's like a broken record, but like that is my favorite part of Friday mornings is we get to talk to these guys and not only for what they've done, but what they're currently doing too. I think maybe some people missed out on that part. Like these guys aren't just legends of yesteryear. They're still doing legendary things in our game, which is inspiring and cool that you can reinvent yourself and even after your playing days and find ways to make this game, you know, grow in different paths. So two guys that are definitely very inspiring and doing really cool things and, you know, great teammates.
And we should just remind everyone, 15 for life. I'm sure more of that will come out. Rob Kevovic's family is doing putting together a foundation for awareness and such. So obviously something we'll all look out for. Go to CaseyPowell.com. Check out where he's doing his destination. I wish I was playing, man. Destination tournaments. Now that's a cool thing.
Well, the Bachlets have. He didn't really. He spoke briefly on it, but it looks like the X10 lacrosse.
Mm-hmm.
So we want to support him and his family's efforts. It's a family affair. You know, they all get involved. So that's pretty cool that they get a chance to spend some summers. Yeah, it looks like they're going to be in Asheville in June, in Utah, in Colorado, in the Adirondacks. Like, geez, they really picked some terrible places to spend their summer summer days doing lacrosse.
Oh, great, great
they're
location.
They're doing it right, man. They're doing it right. Yeah.
All right, man. My friend, we'll see you. We'll chat with you during the week, and we'll set up next week's show, and we'll figure out what we're doing. We haven't figured that out yet, but we're getting there.
Absolutely. All right. Thanks, Mike. You have a great weekend.
All right. Take it easy, man.
No exit music. Jeez.